January 28, 1974. Interview with Gillis Long, January 24, 1974.
You think back over the period, say from 1974 through 48, what would be the most significant political changes that have occurred in that 25-year period?
Black voter registration is now up to about 22%, and it all came about during that period is the most important thing.
Well, what are the consequences of that?
Well, we've nearly gone full circle, I guess, since that time. Is that we politically we went from a moderate. Preoccupied or occupied with social issues type of situation, which the government ought to have been occupied with starting in about 48 to where we became greatly concerned by the racial issue, and it moved back now back in the other direction, looking at it particularly from a congressional point of view, up to where away from the race issue as being a central point, and moved back to where the state is primarily concerned with resolving the problems of the state rather than being preoccupied by this what had been an overriding consideration, in my opinion, during that particular time, which had many offshoots and many facets to it and manifested itself in many and varied ways.
Think there's any chance you ever go back to that sort of situation where the politics is based on race?
I don't really believe we will in Louisiana. I think, frankly, it's behind us. I don't think that any major politician representing a large area, certainly insofar as bigger than congressional districts is concerned, I'm not sure that we're yet out of it with respect to congressional districts, but that larger than congressional districts, a statewide office, for example, that I think is going to be very difficult, and one to get elected to a statewide office on a racist type of platform, and conversely, that it's going to be very difficult for them to get elected at all without at least some support from the black community.
One of the things that things that really strike us is the influence of the Longs and at least their legacy today. When you think about that 25-year period, you can't help but look at the impact that Earl Long had on that thing. How do you assess the Longs in that period? In terms of their impact in state politics?
Well, he's a very prominent politician in the state of Louisiana that not too long ago said that he had been a major factor in breaking up what he called the Long machine in Louisiana well before this period of 1948 to 1974 began, and was bragging about this point. And I gently reminded him that since that time, that Earl had been elected governor twice, that Russell Long had been in Senate nearly that entire period, in the Senate during that nearly entire period, that I'd been a leading candidate for governor twice, I'd been elected to the House of Representatives twice, that another Long by the name of Dr. George S. Long had served at least three terms in the same seat that I hold. Another fellow by the name of Long, Speedy Long, had served in this seat for two or three terms. And that other than that, that there was no question about what the Longs had an influence. I said, if that's the type of a breaking up of political influence that of which he's bragging, that and if it affects me, I was happy to see it come about. Is that I really think it's been a major influence. I think it's been true for two different reasons. At the beginning of it, it was true because of the historical nature of it, more so than it is today, in that, in my opinion, because of Huey, and then, of course, Earl first ran in, what was it, 48, I guess. When I ran for president of the LSU student body in 1947, the Longs hadn't won an election in Louisiana since 1936. I came back, and this was, being president of the LSU student body is a little bit like a statewide office in the state, more so then than it was now. For example, Russell was president of the student body at LSU, and you can name just about who's who in Louisiana, and they've been active in LSU politics and have either been president of the student body or run. And this was particularly true at that time up to and including World War II. In 47, when I came back and was elected, I don't know really that the fact that my name was Long had too much to do with it, right? The fact that I was elected. I conducted a campaign as an independent, spoke my mind, and got elected. Right after that, Earl ran for governor. I supported Earl, who was elected governor. Right after that, Russell ran for the United States Senate, who was elected the United States Senate, practically within a while. I don't remember the exact time sequence, about a year and a half's period there. All of that occurred from April of one year when I was elected, April of 47, when I was elected April of 47, I guess it was, when I was elected president of the student body. Was it April of 48? No, April of 47, when I was elected president of the LSU student body. And then all of that followed in sequence. I think that to some extent that this Chaim is a result of what Huey had done. But I think the fact that Earl Long, like Harry Truman, his years have passed, has come to be a much more appreciated man, of a man who really represented the public interest, a man who really had great, great belief in democratic systems of government, and a man who had the political courage and had political leadership and also wasn't driven by a desire to get rich and wasn't a crook, is that this has helped all of us. That the desire to be of public interest is exemplified by Earl and by Russell and by myself has basically come through some storms that might have otherwise seen the because of the passage of time, the falling off of the influence of Huey Long in Louisiana. But I think that's where it came from. And I don't think all of us have got to be frank and admit that to some extent when we got started in it during that time and got it back started again, the very fact that our name was Long helped us. But I think that further than that, we've shown this, and I think all of us have shown it.
But the so-called Long machine, if there ever was one, is no longer here.
Well,
if you were to push a button on this, what happens?
If I pushed a button of everybody that I had in the state of Louisiana basically sympathetic to me, it certainly wouldn't be anything at all that was resembled the old Long organization. It would be a completely new type of a thing, which has a little bit of a core, maybe 5% or 7% or 8% of those that are in it historically, because of past attachments by their parents or themselves. With the old Huey Long, Earl Long organization of many, many years ago. But frankly, I don't think it's that. I think that it's come as a result of what I outlined before rather than that. If we look at the people that have been active either in my gubernatorial election last time or in my congressional race. My congressional race is perhaps a good indication of it. The principal supporters of it and are not in it. My supporters are not in it because of the fact that my name was Long. Fact is, a lot of them were very much anti-Long, that are strongly endorsing me today. My finance chairman my committee for re-election of Gillis Long for Congress is headed by the man I defeated for Congress 10 years ago, Harold Mack Sweeney. Which I think is an indication of the extent to which things have come during that period, and I guess no more bitter fight ever occurred in the history of Louisiana politics than the fight for that congressional primary seat when Earl died between Earl Long and Harold Mack Sweeney. Then I came back and beat Harold Mack Sweeney after that, and Harold is now is the chairman of the committee for the reelection of Gillis Long. Harold served in Congress, two terms. No, he served one, and then Earl beat him in the primary, and then he got the Democratic nomination by action of the Democratic Committee when Earl died after he'd received the nomination, and then before the general election. And he became the nominee and consequently served two terms.
So it's no longer meaningful to describe the state politically as Long and anti-Long forces.
You can't say that. Yes, you can say that, but you can't say that it's no longer an influence, because when elections are determined by 2%, 3%, 4%, 1%, it can become a determining factor. But it's also important from another standpoint of the name recognition and and this. I think on balance it's a plus, but I don't think it's anywhere near saying that you have an organization that, that comes to you just because of the fact your name is Long.
What about the notion that with the election of Edwards, the power in the state shifted from the north to the south?
Well, I don't really think this in itself is a, certainly it's an important point. But the power didn't, Huey Long sufficiently bridged, and the Longs always sufficiently bridged this gap between North and South Louisiana. And the Longs never ran as regional type of people. You recall my governor's election, I carried the city of New Orleans, for example. And I think there are other factors that are much more important from this point of view and that, than is that point. I do think that the fact that Edwin was from South Louisiana and the other man was from Shreveport and the other man had no ability to bridge this gap became an important point in Edwin's winning the election and the runoff against Bennett. But should I have been in the runoff as an example, I'm not sure that he would have been able to have consolidated in his position in South Louisiana to the degree that he was able to against Bennett Johnson, because of the fact that from Huey Long's day on down, the Longs have been statewide candidates and have been perhaps in many areas and in the last few years much more acceptable in South Louisiana and much supported more strongly in South Louisiana than in North. Probably it reflects a little bit of both, in my opinion. We're talking, y'all are not going to quote me, are you? I mean, I don't want to be quoted on an anti-Catholic sort of a situation in North Louisiana, but I think, frankly, it's not so much an anti-Catholic type of a thing. Is it? It's an anti-South Louisiana type of a situation that you find to some extent in North Louisiana. Not nearly as much as you used to find it, but I think you find a little bit of it. And I think that probably more of it is on a basic division of conservative as against more progressive, and that this perhaps adequately represents it more than a move towards Republican-Democrat. If you look at it, my district, which pretty well will always stay Democratic, and Lindy Boggs and Johnny Bros are all basically in South Louisiana. Mine now has shifted from the focal point of my district is, I don't even have all of Rapides Parish, for example, all of the area around Alexandria. Ward 11 of that area is now in Otto Passman's district. And this district, while it used to go, when I had the seat before, and when Speedy Long had it, it went, other than a Boyle's Parish, which was the only parish to the south of it, it went north. When Dr. George Long had it, when Errol Maxween had it, when I had it before, it went northwest, and now it goes southeast from Alexandria. So my point is that I think it's a combination of factors again. To some extent, it was an anti-South Louisiana vote. To perhaps a greater extent, it was a little bit of a move towards a more conservative posture on the part of North Louisiana. I think the congressional districts also adequately reflect that.
So you see it, and I'm just trying to understand it. But would you consider it to be more of an ethnic vote than a party vote?
No, I would see it neither of those as being the major factor. I would see it more as a philosophical vote. Conservative is against progressive rather than Republican against Democrat, or rather than Catholic against non-Catholic, and rather than North against South. I would see if you had to put them all on a scale, the one I would put on the scale first is conservative is against progressive.
Well, if Treen had been a Catholic instead of a Methodist, French name instead of Anglo-Saxon, how do you think the vote would have fared then?
His vote would have been a little smaller, but it wouldn't have been much smaller. I don't really think. I think that while it's on the scale of the things that made it, I don't think it's a major part of the scale. I don't think it's way up on the scale.
Because on the Republican Party, or most southern states, you see the development of a two-party system. You see Republicans getting elected. And you look at Louisiana, practically nothing. And it doesn't look as though there's going to be anything. Is there some way you can explain that? Why is Louisiana different than the other southern states on that score?
That's a good question. I really never had thought of it in quite that form as to why we hadn't done it. Particularly if you thought it was ever going to happen, you really wouldn't have thought it was going to happen where it did, with respect looking at it again as congressional districts. If you take that one district that cuts across there from Jefferson Parish across Iberia that Dave represents. Perhaps historically it's due to the fact that the Republicans in the state have pretty well kept a closed shop. They've not attempted to broaden the base out. They've really not sought, in my opinion, to strongly develop a two-party system in the state of Louisiana. It goes back to the old bourgeois class of the Republicans used to be the sugar planters. And they always thought they had an exclusive carnival club, and I think that most of the Republicans in the state, a lot of them, have still sort of felt that it's theirs to do and to play with the way they want to play with it. And that I've had a lot of people talk to me that have joined it. My next door neighbor's a Republican. He told me the other day, he said, "I think I'm going to quit the Republican Party." And it's not because of Watergate, it's not because of Nixon, it's not because of a change in philosophy, it's because of the fact that basically they don't get an opportunity to participate. George Hall, who was a Republican in Alexandria, used to be president of the State Bar Association. George went, and it used to disgust him because he never could get them really to be willing to spread out their base. And I think this is so historically ingrained in them that it's very difficult to get them to do it. They really don't want to.
So then they're exclusive, and the failure of providing leadership to get more people.
That's right.
Do you think that it's primarily the failure of leadership is a key factor in
this? Yes.
Factor there?
Right. I don't see much change in it occurring. I don't see much change in it occurring. Also, the other thing is, looking at it from the other side, is that those areas that would be more likely, which it would be more likely that they could get strong Republican support, have been historically voting with the Republicans, and consequently you don't get the motivation from behind to push it in that direction that you might have gotten in some of the other areas. Is it looking at it again from congressional districts, which regionalizes it to some degree, is it to look at the degree of which they voted in the past with the Republicans? I mean, why do they need to vote Republican when they've got Speedy Long instead of me, for example, in my own, what used to be the old congressional district where I was? He said they don't need to vote Republican. They vote in the Democratic primary, and they vote the more conservative candidate in the Democratic primary, and consequently they don't really have the motivation to do it. This hadn't necessarily been true in some of the other areas.
Do you have any insights into why the black vote in Louisiana is so rigidly wedded to the Democratic Party? I mean, it tends to be Democratic throughout the South, but the impression I had in Louisiana was even more strongly than elsewhere.
I think a little bit.
I'm just kind of curious.
This is interesting. I think that I'm not sure how deep it is and how long it's been there, to tell you the truth about it. I don't know. On reflection, if you go back, it's probably due to Earl Long more than any other single factor. Probably Earl Long. Earl Long was always a loyalist Democrat. And Earl Long was, I'm not kidding you, he took his licks. Some of us took licks trying to trying to get some representation for blacks, but nobody took them like Earl Long took them. And I think that the very fact that Earl did this, and they associated and related to Earl as well as they did, and then if you came back in this last gubernatorial election, that the two of us who really, really got the black support were both National Democrats, Edwin and I, and that it sort of capped the thing off and maybe crystallized it to some degree.
I also heard Bennett Johnson has viewed, since he got to the Senate, as much more of a National Democrat than he was when he was running for governor. Is that a fair appraisal? Or?
I don't know that it's that. I think that Bennett got a good education in the governor's race, a good education in the Senate race, and Washington has shown him some things and other sides of problems that he hadn't had the opportunity to see before, and that Bennett's a very bright fellow, and that he learns a lot and gets and profits by education. And consequently, he's become more broad with respect to what the problems of the nation are, which makes him not so restrictive as he was before, which necessarily means that he becomes more of a nationalist Democrat.
Do you think part of that includes a greater appreciation of the fact that 22-23% of the voters in Louisiana are black?
Yeah, but not per se on account of that, but just because of the fact that in the general election, in the general election against McKithen, he needed this support and he got to know them, and consequently getting to know them made him again more sympathetic with their problems and more understanding of them, rather than just recognizing it as a cold, hard political fact that they represent 22% of the vote of the state. You know, what motivates him? I don't know. What motivates anybody? Combination of both, I would say.
This idea expressed in the article you wrote on Congress and possible trend of the new Democratic congressman from the South moving, being much more of mainstream National Democrats. Do you think that trend is going to develop more?
Oh, a little more, but I think that those, to the extent that it develops the other way, that it's going to be those who vote with Republicans going into the Republican column. I think that's the direction which it's likely to move. And from a standpoint of how it affects national policy, it's really not going to make much difference whether they're in Democrats voting as Republicans or Republicans voting as Republicans. And I think that you're going to see some of that, some more of that in the South during the next few years. But I think that conversely, you're going to see those that are from the districts like I am, and that they will vote more and more towards the support of the National Democratic Party. That's the reason I come out with the conclusion that it's the same things happening in the South that happen to the rest of the nation.
Where do you see someone like your colleague, Mr. Rarick, going? You see him going to the Republican Party? Can he continue to get elected as a Democrat? Will he have to change his positions?
Oh, I don't think he will. I think that the leadership of the Republicans in the state of Louisiana has been so poor that people are used to voting for a Democrat for Congress and a Republican for president. I don't think it's going to hurt Rarick at all, the fact that he's under the Democratic column. It's going to take an unusual situation. The state of Louisiana could go Republican. I don't think it particularly would bother me that they'd go Republican. I think that people have now so much started jumping from one side to the other, and not only ticket splitting nationally and as they do everywhere else, but I think this is even more true in Louisiana, is that everybody participates in the Democratic primary and he's going to get elected in the Democratic primary, and consequently it makes it very difficult for anybody to run a general election against him. Because if he could get beat in the Democratic primary and somebody else that was more progressive could get the Democratic nomination, then you might have that type of a situation where you get people like John and those that vote as often as they do with the Republicans getting elected in the primary. It's just not much chance to beat them as long as they're on the scene.
Yeah, but doesn't your piece seem to suggest that you're getting a different kind of congressman out of the South? In other words, during the 1960s, the number of times that Southern Democrats voted with Republicans increased throughout that whole decade, as I read it. And what's your argument?
Say it again, Walt.
Yeah. During the 50s and 60s, if you look at the number of times Southern Democrats voted with Republicans, it increases, it doesn't decrease.
Sure.
All right. Now, you're saying that the 1972 election was somehow a turning point here. Now what you have are Democrats, Southern Democrats tending to vote more with Northern Democrats.
Right.
Okay. Now, was the 1972 election a turning point in this regard? Is that the way you see that?
Yeah, I see it as a turning point for a couple of reasons, but I don't see it really increasing much more from the standpoint of the Democrats having an ability, the National Democrats having an ability to pick up many more seats in that regard. They'll pick up some. Let me give you a case. Let's take Louisiana as a case in point. They could very well, National Democrats could very well in the next few years, if Otto decided not to run, Otto's seat could very well turn National Democrat. It's high percentage black population, a lot of rural people in it, a lot of poor people in it. Many of the characteristics, demography of it's not too dissimilar from mine. Treen's district could go back Democratic. Now, I'm sure that there are others over the state, that over the South, that could move in the same direction. So I see this trend continuing to grow, but at the same time, you see the trend of those who have in the past that are still staying there, that have voted with the Republicans, holding their seats against the Republicans. But let's assume Joe Wagner didn't run, for example. Again, in a usual situation other than Louisiana, for the reasons that I set forth before, I think that in the Democratic, it would nearly be resolved in the Democratic primary, and anybody would have a very difficult time of beating Joe, a successor to Joe, assuming Joe didn't run, in a general election, because the area itself would go in the same direction that it's been going. But in other states where you've got Republicans that could move into it, you would find that district maybe very likely turning into a Republican district. And that's the reason I say that you've got a regionalization occurring, and it's going to continue to occur. I believe that it comes primarily as a result of the fact of the increase in the black voting registration, plus the fact, in my opinion, that nobody can really run a racist campaign in those areas anymore.
So you're getting a different kind of a candidate, too. That's one of the primaries, right?
Surely.
Okay.
But it's in the primary.
That's right.
It's in the primary. But generally, if it weren't for Louisiana and this unique situation that you mentioned in Louisiana about the, or maybe you raised the question about why have they not elected Republicans in Louisiana like they have in the rest of the other states of the South, is that what would happen, assuming my trend that I'm correct, that we've changed it, that if something happened to Joe Wagner, is that that district would likely go Republican. But as long as Joe's there and as strong a man as Joe is, as controlled as he has, it's not, even though Joe might vote most of the time with the Republicans. See? But in Mississippi, if a similar situation happened, or some of the other states in the South, it very likely would turn and go Republican. And that's the trend that I say is beginning to occur. Otto Passman's district, Otto is so strong, controls his district so strong, that even though Otto might vote mostly with the Republicans, is that if something happened to Otto, that even if you had a general election, the Democrat would still win in that district. But, as it turns out, it'd be a Democrat, whether you'd be a conservative Democrat or a national Democrat, progressive Democrat, because of the fact that the Republican Party just doesn't have the strength in Louisiana to overcome that type of situation.
Yeah, but now, what you're saying, I think, is when you would take race out of this equation, as the article does, it pretty well removes it as an issue, what you can then elect in the South are more progressive congressmen.
Well, surely. I think it's moving in that direction because of the fact that yes, whether they be Democrats or whether they be whether those that remain that vote with the National Party be called Democrats or whether they be called Republicans, then the major trend is towards more progressive congressmen from the South. Yes, more National Democratic congressmen.
Is the South any more important or is it less important terms of the Congress now than it was when you were first here? But has the Southern strength in terms of committee chairmanships, just overall power, has it increased or decreased in that period?
Well, I think it probably, I'd have to go back and look at it from when I was here 10 years ago, but I think it's probably increased, but it's probably about reached its apex and it's about to start down. If you look at, again, using Louisiana as a case in point, is that we weren't as strong 10 years ago. Hebert wasn't chairman of Armed Services. Russell Long wasn't chairman of Finance. Ellender was, I guess, chairman of Agriculture, but wasn't chairman of Appropriations.
hail bogs. Here in the last year and a half, or 2 years, insofar as Louisiana is concerned, we've about reached the top of it. In the seniority system, which is, insofar as at least having power in Congress is concerned, has served us so well for so many years in building up all these powerful people. Now in the last year, we've lost Hale Boggs, who got into his position of ranking man on Ways and Means, and consequently as a part of his position in leadership, as a part of the seniority system, just as the very fact that he was here for a good while, 20 years before he was elected to help. Ellender's situation, Ellender, we've lost both of them, and a lot of the people that have gained very senior positions are now getting old.
How about the rest of the South?
I think the same is true. Look at John Sparkman in Alabama. Look at McClellan in Arkansas. Look at Pogue in Texas of agriculture, looking at it on the House side. Look at Mahon in Texas on the House side.
It's at the peak now, and it has to decline.
If you look at it overall, that's a broad generalization. Louisiana's was the peak was reached 2 years ago. But I would say that it's probably just within a year, 1 way, 2 years, 1 way or the other, all over the South of reaching its maximum point.
And a lot of people ranking second and third on these committees are not so.
That's right.
Correct?
That's right. Because of the fact that you get a senior guy on it, you only get one man from your state or one man from your area. Consequently, the next guys that go on it, they tend up to build a more of a national image. Frankly, I like this. I think the seniority system, while it might have served the South well from the standpoint of gaining power, I'm not sure overall it served the South well, but at least it did from the standpoint of gaining power under the committee system and under the seniority system, is that I'm happy to see that it go myself.
Getting back to another question, though, am I correct that you're saying that future Democrats elected to Congress from the South are more likely to be progressive?
That's right.
But that you're not necessarily going to have as many Democrats elected.
That's right.
And that the Republicans who are likely to get elected will be more reflective of the traditional conservative Democratic Congress.
That's correct. That's well states my position on that.
Do you see it?
Yeah. How long y'all want to talk about?
Find out that everybody down there seems to think that corruption plays some kind of a major factor in the state government, and that level of tolerance is higher for corruption, that sort of thing. Do you have any comments on that?
Well, I think that any place where you get the degree of its wealth dependent upon its natural resources is the state of Louisiana has, is West Virginia is a case in point, for example. And those, the extraction of those resources dependent upon political approval in order to extract them, who extracts them, what rate they extract them, what tax they pay for extracting them, is that this tends to give an undue amount of power to the politicians with respect to controlling the economy, and that this necessarily becomes to some degree a banana republic type of a situation. And I think this has happened to a lot of states, and I think that the very fact that so much of our wealth was in oil, that we've gone through an awful lot of political corruption in the state of Louisiana. But the degree of tolerance that people have on it always seemed to me to be varying with individuals. I'm speaking of individual candidates. People basically knew, for example, that Earl Long liked to play the horses, and Earl Long needed a lot of money to run his political organizations because he was dealing with poor people. He had to have money to form his organizations, to get them to go out and vote, organize them to get them to go vote. And that, but they also knew that having a lot of money and getting rich and being a crook wasn't Earl Long. And consequently, the level of tolerance that Earl Long could get away with, if anything, was high, because the people basically had a great trust for Earl Long, and had a great trust built in that he was really looking out for their interests. And then consequently, they'd put up a lot of things with respect to his conduct, whatever form that it might take, than they would have a lot of other people that that were active in politics. I do think we've had more than our share of corruption. I think it also is directly related to the level of education and the level of literacy that we have. In fact, we're probably first in illiteracy or second in illiteracy in the Union, I think, is related to this problem also. I think the fact that we have as many poor people as we do relates to the level of political corruption. I'm not trying to excuse it by saying this, but I'm saying that these are factors that are often related to political corruption. All three of these are, and all three of them are apparent in the state of Louisiana, and that they've caused it, and that we do have more than our share of it. I think it's very unfortunate.
Compared with the rest of the South, Louisiana has probably done more in the way of social programs sponsored by the state than any other state, probably far more. And yet the results of that has not been reflected in any substantial increase in relative position in regards to literacy, some improvement there, but certainly not in terms of per capita income and other such indices. How do you account for that, how would you react to the contention of some who maintain that these programs and what is perceived, at least, as a relatively high level of political corruption, and also what is perceived to be as a substantial influence in state government by organized labor, all tend to scare off industry, resulting in Louisiana falling behind relatively the rest of the South in increased job opportunities and economic opportunities?
Well, it's sort of a hen and egg type of a proposition. You know, you don't know which breeds which comes first. I don't argue the contention that we have spent more of our income and been more progressive in social programs than perhaps any state in the South. I mean, we had the first charity hospital system, first public school book system, first free hot lunch programs, and you can go right on down the line with them. Nearly all of which, by the way, were put in by either Huey or Earl Long. Nor do I argue that we really hadn't got our money's worth out of that. Standpoint of improving our status, as you point out, in our educational level, we've just not been able to do it. But it's a little bit like the fellow that's sick and he takes some medicine and says, well, did the medicine help you? He said, well, I don't know, at least I didn't die. But we've had so many poor people, so many illiterate people, that had we not had these programs, that we might have been in much worse shape than we are today. And I'm not at all sure, but that's not the answer, that these programs have kept many people alive. They've given people jobs, and the charity hospitals have kept them alive. The lunch programs have kept them alive, and if we hadn't have had that, we'd have really even been much worse off than we are. I don't know. I think that the political corruption has kept industry to some degree away from the state of Louisiana. We've not really made an effort to attract industry that employs people. This goes back, in my opinion, to something that is more basic. And that is that we've had all of these rich natural resources, and that we have been dependent so much upon those that we have not made the efforts that the other southern states have to attract industry and to be competitive with respect to vocational schools and doing things like this that would give a labor supply and move it in the direction of having an adequate labor supply. Huey Long's belief that everybody ought to have an opportunity to get a college education is probably hurdles, that everybody gets directed towards that type of an education rather than an education of making a living. The very fact that we were so rich in oil and so rich in natural gas is that we've attracted industry, and we measure industry that comes in the state and have been for the last 12 years, 10 years, 8 years under McKithen, and I guess we're still doing it, I'm not sure we are, but we quit measuring it in dollars, in numbers of jobs created by industry coming in, and we started measuring it in terms of dollars of capital investment, because they were mostly automated industries that did not pay their fair share of taxes, that did not create for per dollar capital invested many jobs. And then in addition to that, our whole program that we started to induce industry in the state was based upon allowing them a tax-exempt status. So they end up not even paying basically a property tax and not even creating the jobs for which they're given the property tax exemption. And this, to a great extent, has occurred during the last about 10 or 11 or 12 years. At the beginning of the McKithen administration, it occurred. And then under the Jimmy Davis administration, it occurred. And to some extent, under the Earl Long administration. But mostly under the McKithen administration, when we had the great economic growth and really had an opportunity to attract industries that employed a lot of people, we didn't do it. We attracted industries that came in, made big $40, $50, $200 million capital investments, and employed practically no people at all. I used an example when I was running for governor of a plant that had $2 million capital investment, of which they paid absolutely no property tax, and employed a total of people in the state of Louisiana of zero. It was run by a computer in Houston, Texas. I think this is more the reason for it than anything else. It goes back to the fact that natural resources and the abundance that we've had them in Louisiana, and so far as stability and clean political government, and also in from a standpoint of resourceful people, sometimes tends to spoil us.
But doesn't that mean in the future you're going to run into real trouble with taxation because your property tax is frozen in the Constitution?
Just horrible.
What the convention did 2 weeks ago. There's no room there at all.
Absolutely frightening. Yeah. Absolutely frightening. And when they went and recently and increased this tax, which I would have done on the
severance tax,
which I would have done, and you know about when I was talking about running for governor, so we were talking about a major vocational educational program to train people for jobs. And what we would have done is that I would have done that, but I wouldn't have taken the taxes off that took off and given them tax relief. What I'd have done is I'd have put all that money into a major vocational educational program, or substantially all of it. I really think this is what I tried to run for governor 10 years ago on. I think it's even more important today than it was when I ran 3 years ago. And I think it's even more important today. Now, they have moved to some degree in that direction. Edwin has, and I applaud his moves. The only thing I think they should have been done 10 years ago when McKithen was first elected governor.
I'd really like some insights on something that I find of interest, and that is, in historical perspective, Huey Long's great Share Our Wealth program, and Russell Long's sons in the Senate, and finally, you get down to the family assistance program, which to some extent would have been the nearest thing to an implementation of the Share the Wealth program, and Russell Long plays the lead role in opposing it. And how do you explain that?
Well, I think the reason Russell did that is that Russell really, really was not so much against the program as he was against the fact that he couldn't get the Nixon administration at that time to support a work requirement in the program. To the degree that he wanted a work requirement in the program. And that is, that ought to be the major thrust towards it. And I think that had they had that in there, my guess would have been that Russell Long would have supported it. I read an interesting article the other day, and I've forgotten where I read it, but that it was an interview with Russell. He was talking about it, and they asked him, said, well, look at it, and you look back at it now and said, how you feel about your daddy's Share the Wealth program? He said, well, you know, he said, I thought it had some, I'm not sure it's so appropriate today, he says, but if they had it before the Senate and they rang that bell and said a twinkle came to his eye, he said, I think I'd vote for it. And that's sort of the way I think it is. I think they had the work requirement in it, I think Russell would have supported the program.
End interview with Gillis Long. No more transcription on this tape. Second side is blank.